The Great Canadian Talk Show.
It was only a couple of watts, but I brought the truth to everyone within three blocks of the west side of campus.
No way! Yes way!
And now, let's get right down to business with Marty Gold.
Welcome to the Great Canadian Talk Show podcast. This is episode 22 of season 4. And boy, we're really piling up the episodes. We're piling up the increase in the number of listeners, in particular to the podcast. And I want to thank you all because I think some of you are spreading the word. We're certainly doing what we can in the online world. But there's been quite a shift in terms of the top 10 in that some of our most recent episodes, I'd say half of the top 20, are from this season, which is just a tremendous endorsement, I think, to some extent, of the kind of work we're doing here, bringing you reports, analysis, investigations, unlike the mainstream media, leaving them in the dust when it comes to so many different subjects that they never report on. The mainstream media never reporting that Nahanni Fontaine had changed her name many years ago. That is still one of our top-rated podcasts from the provincial election. The two most recent podcasts about Bell MTS, their plans to try to find ways to lay off workers in Winnipeg and Brandon, taking a particularly distasteful tactic by giving people the choice to move, leave Brandon, move to Winnipeg, or otherwise find themselves unemployed on Canada Day. Those two episodes have cracked our top 10. An interview with the 88-year-old magistrate who was punched on the August-long weekend waiting for a bus. That's still in the top 10. Councillor Edie's talk with us about transit safety and City Hall safety has also cracked the top 10. And so I encourage you all to go to actionline.ca, take a look. If you go to the donate page, the top podcasts in various categories, interviews with crime victims, for instance, the City Hall interviews, and you're going to hear me talk about some of those councillors here in this episode. Those are all in categories. When you scroll down the donate page, donate first. Check out the categories if you really want reinforcement why this is the public affairs hub of Winnipeg, why this provides the institutional memory that you need, that our elected officials need, to really understand the decisions they're making and to make sure that everybody involved, including the media, is held accountable. Now, the last episode really revolved around, what's old is new again. Actually, two episodes ago, the bus consultations. And I've got more about that because the city seems to be trying to pull a fast one on me that I'm going to try to address on Monday with City Hall, where they claim that that information was freely and easily available on the city website. And then when I pressed them on it on Facebook, well, our Twitter was this, our Facebook was that, but the city website, they don't want to answer the question. It appears they tried to fool me. Could be that the person answering the question in the back end was uninformed or just didn't understand the point. So again, fake consultation, going to come up again today, by the way. More used needles, decried by Councillor Gilroy, suddenly waking up to that problem. We covered that years ago. The scam of the Friends of Upper Fort Garry. That episode 20, the subtext of that one was what's old is new again. And that brings me to today's episode, Portage in Maine. Because once again, what's old is new again. And in a couple of parts here, I'm going to explain to you what's gone on this week. And what you don't hear from city council, from the mayor, from any of the media outlets, they aren't looking beyond the cost factors in this in terms of, why the intersection hypothetically should be reopened, whether it's worth keeping it closed in terms of the expense. They don't look at the reasons behind why it was closed. Of course, that's up to me. That's what makes us top of the game here in Winnipeg. I'm going to prove it to you with this episode. We earn your support, unlike CBC that gets a raise from Trudeau. Well, I guess they do earn the support because of the the lack of truly critical questioning of the Prime Minister at various press events, et cetera, and maintaining generally the narrative of the federal government and the narrative of the modern day agenda. We reject that. Now, is reopening Portage and Maine part of the modern day agenda of the urban visionaries? Well, of course it is. This is part of their religion in Winnipeg. And you can tell because the Urban Visionaries were surrounding Mayor Gillingham at his press conference, a sudden press conference called on Friday, CBC getting the leak, I found out, from a city councillor. Late on Thursday night, Friday morning, the mayor holding a press conference to say that a report that has come in has determined that the cost is too much to repair the intersection. There's necessary repairs in particular to the membrane. Otherwise, you have floods in the concourse, and you don't want those kinds of disasters. Most people can't even imagine what happens when a pipe bursts in a hotel and the first floor gets flooded. And I saw that again this week, by the way. So most people don't understand how important that can be. But even so, our listener is pretty smart when it comes to that subject. And I'll get to that information as I explain this. The mayor's saying 73 mil, 5 years of traffic disruptions going through the major intersection, not worth the cost. Also saying that the traffic that goes through the intersection has been reduced over the course of the last few years. And therefore, it's just not as big a deal as it used to be. As the media put it, he notes lots has changed in 6 years. And a lot of this information wasn't known during the 2018 plebiscite that even Brian Bowman, as spineless a politician as you'd ever find, even Brian Bowman kept his promise on that one. And in this case, Gillingham changing his mind based on the new facts, so he says. But this, of course, aligns him now with the woke caucus over in at City Hall at 510 Main Street, because standing with him on the podium for various reasons, but in particular, this aligns with their ideology, Councillor Santos, Councillor Rollins, Councillor Cindy Gilroy. While the media explains it that their wards encompass the general downtown area, the way it was actually put in one of the reports was are adjacent to, that's correct, but not really the whole picture. There's other wards that are going to be affected by this idea of opening up the corner. Primarily, though, Gillingham, what he and Councillor Wallens are trying to do, draft a motion that recommends redesigning the intersection, opening pedestrian crossings by the summer of 2025 to coincide with the launch of the new transit network. We've already covered and explained how bogus the consultations are of the transit network. The transit master plan rushed through in 3 weeks. Now they want to rush through in a period of a few weeks through the month of March while they're doing the budget. While people's eyes are on a different ball, they want to rush through this kind of a process. I ask you in the audience, including those of you that are on city council that listen to this program, how is this any different from the walk-ons in the Sam Cates era? And how many mistakes, costly mistakes, did we see, are we still paying for because of that kind of a tactic of rushing things onto an agenda and not giving people the opportunity to fully examine what is being proposed? This doesn't really pass the sniff test. Although the rush, they'll say, is because of the transit network, which is also why they're rushing the consultations, why they're holding them during the budget consultation period, so councillors themselves can't attend those budget, transit meetings that are the five that are held in the community, not one in every ward. And don't get me started on how many city councillors do not have anything on their social media about the meetings that have taken place through the end of February and early March, those five meetings. They don't want feedback, the urban visionary crowd. It hurts them to hear people expose how ludicrous, how wasteful, how ideological their desires are when it comes to your amenities, your quality of life, your budget. Nonetheless, Gilliam trying to move ahead, and there is support for the idea. James Richardson & Sons, providing a statement to City TV, is in favor, they say, of improving and revitalizing Winnipeg's downtown, including taking the step of opening the Portage Main intersection to pedestrian traffic. And they also can't really comment about closing the underground pathway, what's called the circus. I'll get to that in a second. They can't comment on that part of the plan. Harvard Developments owns 201 Portage, the other side of the intersection, the northwest side. They support reopening the intersection. Their spokesman, the Harvard president, it's a she. I don't know if she's from Calgary or not. They also haven't been able to assess the impact. The MMF, which has taken over the former Bank of Montreal building, they're planning to open a museum, an interpretive center, headquarters, whatever. In 2026, they want to enable foot traffic to be able to, get the Heritage Center. So they're in favor of it. And look at this. Even though the mainstream media got absolutely no comments from Bell MTS about their plans to lay off jobs in Winnipeg and in Brandon, they did take the time to contact Bell MTS, which owns a tower at the southeast corner. They declined comment. Artis Real Estate, the trust, owns another building on the corner. They were not able to respond in time. Now, the mayor acknowledging, Mayor Gillingham, that is, that this would not necessarily garner the support of all councillors. He was there at the press conference with Gilroy, Santos, Rollins, and Janice Lukes. Still waiting for the interview with you, Janice, my dear. Chair of Public Works. He acknowledged that some councillors weren't going to be happy. One of them, no stranger to this program, Councillor Brian Mays. He's opposed to the motion and says he's not prepared. He told the WinnipegTribune.com staff, I won't be pushing this through in 3 weeks. He argues that rushing the decision ignores potential alternatives and is divisive by mistake. WinnipegTribune.ca. I'll put that link in the description. So Mays, having the common sense to go, there needs to be further deliberation, exploration of alternative options. The plan is to send this over to the Standing Policy Committee on Property and Development on March the 7th. Meanwhile, Russ Wyatt, again, no stranger to this program, but also trying to have his voice heard and getting shut down. And he raised a lot of good questions. The very hurried press conference ended, and Janice Lukes couldn't wait to get out of the room as the mayor and the other councillors fled, when Wyatt went up to the podium demanding that the city go back to the people that voted in 2018 against this idea. And as described by the media, he jumped up to the podium where Gillingham spoke and addressed people who were there, City Hall staff responsible for audiovisual equipment, turned his microphone off. Well, I've got that audio. Let's see if we can play it right now. You'll hear a moment of Russ Wyatt.
Councillor Russ Wyatt crashing the mayor's press conference to share his feelings.
I disagree with the members of the council who are here today, along with the mayor. I don't think the mayor has the right to undermine the voice and the will of the people.
That's not all that Russ Wyatt had to say in a media interview. He said, here's the quote, it raises alarms and concerns that we would rush to judgment, that we'd overturn a plebiscite decision made by the citizens of Winnipeg not to open the intersection. He also questioned why a city planner wrote the report and not a city engineer. And that is an important pivot, because we know that, as it stands, city engineering isn't something that's widely trusted. One of our listeners on our Facebook group, waiting to see how much more we'll have to pay for to fix the botched job on Goulet. Massive holes going into and out of the car wash, the road on one lane has crumbled. So people already don't trust the city when it comes to even what they say is going to happen when they fix something. Another of our listeners saying nothing in the city is ever on time and on budget. Can't wait to sit in traffic while the meth heads are staggering across Portage and Main. Another saying there'll be fights over paneling spots. I'm going to get to that in the second part of this program. But one of our listeners deals with waterproofing membranes, saying, I want to know what kind of membrane system was used in the late 70s. Was it tarred felt? What exactly is the composition of the substrates? Where is the membrane actually situated? What are the various layers of whatever above the concourse? Has there been an independent peer review of the city's engineering report? Presumably there's an explanation of remediation that cost $73 million, but what is it? I don't trust the mayor not to be acting like a special interest bagman. Now, that's something you the media stories didn't really get into about the engineering of this. They cite, the mayor cites a $73 million costs that's made up of excavating, replacing the membrane, water and sewer pipes, new paving, trees, new stairs and elevators to the underground concourse, because the first up premises, if you want to keep the concourse open, people going around the corners or to the different corners, that's where the $73 million comes from. But what does it actually cost to mothball what's called the circus, the roundabout downstairs? I'm not sure, but I'm told that that could be $50 million. If the city only wants to fix the intersection without keeping the concourse open, that's going to cost anywhere from $20 to $50 million, plus $10 million up from $6 million, to put in new pedestrian crossings at the corner. So this is driven by the urban activists, the sore losers from the plebiscite. And there's a reason why, there are a lot of reasons why, people are against this and why they don't trust City Hall on this subject. They've seen what's happened with public consultations on the transit plan, on bike lanes. They see that City Hall is motivated often by things that are beneath the surface, that the media doesn't necessarily dig out, such as these questions about, has this been peer-reviewed by an engineer? And again, what's the cost of mothballing? If the cost of mothballing the underground is $50 million, well, now we're talking about a $23 million difference. Now, I get the idea, the concept, and I'm open to it in terms of traffic flow. I understand all of that. Politically, I can see why Gillingham may be playing footsie here with the urban visionaries. But this is going to affect, in particular, St. Boniface. How long is it going to take to get from Taché and Provence, when you start adding pedestrian cycles, to Portage and Main, and you've already got that queue that fills up going down Portage and around the corner, and now you're going to delay it more? Between that, the restriction because of this moving on Marion plan and putting in bike lanes, the plan that they haven't done on Marion, but they've done on Goulet, put in bike lanes, take out parking, restrict traffic flow, constrict traffic, constrict these major arteries. This could have very damaging effects on the quality of life for the people who live in St. Boniface, for the people who provide services in St. Boniface, for the businesses in St. Boniface that rely on smooth traffic flow for people to get to and from. Now, I speak of this neighborhood because I've been in this neighborhood for many, many years now. This will also affect the traffic flow to and from other neighborhoods, but nobody wants to talk about St. Boniface. We've become like the north end of the south side of the city, so to speak. We get treated like crap. This is another instance where Councillor Lard, not quoted on this yet, surely he'll be in favor of it, but without talking to the people about how these traffic delays caused by adding pedestrians, and it's not just adding pedestrian crossing. Right now, you have panhandlers on the median, that very narrow median, coming towards Portage and Main from the east, from St. Boniface, coming out of the East Exchange. Well, when there's pedestrians there, you can be sure there's going to be a lot more panhandling. One comment, the mayor showed a total lack of respect, says one of our listeners, to Winnipeg voters by not YouTubing his press conference Friday morning so we could hear from his own mouth his reasoning. Now we are likely to get half-truths and the prejudice of others in reports. And you have, because you see Brent Bellamy plastered all over the place and all these other cheerleaders. Shame on you, Mayor Gillingham, says this listener. Looks like this could be an interview, Great Canadian Talk Show podcast interview, early next week. Give the mayor a chance for redemption for his contempt of voters without us knowing the true facts. Well, I've been waiting for quite a while to get an interview with Mayor Gillingham. Will this finally be what breaks the impasse, so to speak? But in the meantime, when I come back from this break, you're going to hear what the mainstream media won't tell you, and what I don't think Mayor Gillingham, not being from Winnipeg, understands. Why was the intersection closed in the first place? The answer? Because of how dangerous it was to pedestrians. And don't take it from me. Take it from a cop. Back with more right after this.
For your home renovation and repair needs, call PKP. For over 20 years, we've built trusted relationships in the North End, West Kildonan, Garden City, and the Maples. Buying a refurbished home? We'll do your pre-purchase inspection and make sure you get what you're paying for. Go to our Facebook page, PKP Renovations and Repairs, or call us 204-297-5446. That's 204-297-5446. PKP Renovations and Repairs.
The Great Canadian Talk Show is brought to you by The Hive Hair Company. From classic to funky, the styles of your life are at The Hive, in the heart of the Osborne Village at 175 Osborne. Call 452-4483 or online, thehivehaircompany.com.
Is your business plagued by thefts and break-ins? Is your residential property under siege by out-of-control crime and vandalism? You need effective safety measures to protect your property. Jamrock Security can help you today. We have the expertise to deliver the right solutions and get your security problems under control. Call 204-880-1564 or contact our website, jamrocksecurity.ca. Do security. Do it smart. Jamrock Security.
What's old is new again, Portage and Maine, episode 22, continuing. You can get all our episodes, all our reports, all the podcasts on actionline.ca. We're in our fundraising drive. This is the target goal is 3,800. We've pulled in about 900. So I need to have a big march here to be able to continue to carry on this work. And we've got goals of expanding, moving into other formats besides podcasting. That's going to take your support. I'm going to make it worth your while. This is an example of the kind of story that requires depth, institutional knowledge, a little bit of analysis, such as the questions about why this was done by a planner, not an engineer, put forward by Councillor Wyatt. And of course, we're always open to Councillor Wyatt, Councillor Mays, Councillor Eady, be getting Councillor Schreier on, hopefully, in the coming week. But I'm going to tell you what the reasons were for closing it down. I've talked about it previously. My father was a cab driver in that era, and he instructed, and I had this right when I got my around the time I got my driver's license, and he was very firm in his instructions, not only to me, but to my brother. At all costs, avoid going through Portage and Maine. This before it was closed. He'd get pretty darn upset if he found out we had gone anywhere near that corner between, say, 10 a.m. and pretty much like 10 p.m., but even then. He didn't like it. Cut over on St. Mary, go down 4, take the Salter Bridge to get home, or go straight down, King Street, and then cut back onto Maine, whatever. He did not want us going through the intersection. You want to know why? Well, on October 18th of 2017, a pretty intelligent, experienced, former, respected former police officer, Menno Zacharias, posted on his blog about Portage in Maine, saying in the wintertime, it's a cold, windy, and slippery place to try and walk. Songs have been written about it. It's been the venue for public rallies. Now, he speaks in this blog post about when he was a new recruit with the Winnipeg Police Force in the early 70s. And after in the afternoon, recruits were assigned to walk beats and do traffic duty. And he names the most dreaded traffic points, Portage and Donald, which was a problem because the deputy chief, Webster, used to use it and used to just give the constable grief about whether there was any problems at that intersection. Mayfair in Maine, which was a two-person job in those days, and the superintendent in charge of training and personnel and the sergeant instructor both rode the bus home along Main Street, and whoa, be to the constables, who failed to facilitate an orderly flow of traffic, especially traffic that was southbound on Main. So you see, this goes back a long way, but those intersections don't mention pedestrian safety. Then there was Portage and Maine, wrote Zacharias, the intersection from hell in terms of traffic and traffic duty. Constable assigned the task had to juggle three lanes of traffic approaching Main from Portage eastbound, Main Street both north and southbound, a lesser flow of traffic from East Portage Avenue, that is, coming from St. Boniface, heading west. Controlling those warning, turn left, right, or proceed straight through was bad enough, but then add pedestrians to the mix, and it was a nightmare. Due to the cold conditions in the winter, pedestrians invariably kept crossing the street well after the don't walk signal came on, because the congestion drivers kept entering the intersection when the traffic light turned amber, and well beyond, the result was gridlock. And of course, many close calls, including the occasional accident involving cars and pedestrians. With all the honking of horns and pedestrians shouting at drivers, it was like being in New York. Now let's sidebar for 1 second. How many pedestrian accidents now are happening at Portage and Main? Pretty much zero. There's certainly some traffic accidents that occur. And we've already seen what happens. There was one day there was an accident at Pioneer and Main, south the intersection, and another at Lombard and Main, north the intersection, and it was miserable for everybody for an hour and a half. But Menno Zacharias said the closing of Portage and Main to pedestrian traffic in 1978 was a major step forward in terms of pedestrian safety and traffic flow in downtown Winnipeg. The reopening of Portage and Main to pedestrian traffic, this is back in Bowman's days, he wrote this, would be a great plan if your end objective was to bog down the center of Winnipeg in a total rush hour gridlock and at the same time endanger the lives of pedestrians. Did you hear any of that from the mainstream media? Of course not. Now, why was it so dangerous? You had a lot of pedestrians who were under the influence. Some because they were habitually that way, some because they had just been imbibing. You have a lot of people that are risk takers, and they see all that territory there, all those lanes of traffic, and they try to hot-foot it across, as we used to say. Now, you go to the modern day, and I understand the notion of having people at street level and crossing, and God knows what they think they're going to do. I mean, this, to me, is just a political ploy, in a large extent, to accommodate the new bus plan, which is being rushed through. There's something here, again, this resembles, in Sam Cates' day, the walk-on motion, that something smells here. But when you start adding, this isn't necessarily going to be, you know, in the old days, you had a lot of shoppers, business class people, visitors, tourists, etc. But you already have a downtown where people in downtown West End, especially, I see this. People wander into traffic now, glued to their phones, or because they're zombies, as Jeff Browati would put it. And now you're going to add that to Portage and Main. Inattentive. Zoned out. Zonked out. High on meth. And of course, it's going to add panhandlers. So what I foresee is that for the city to do this, let's say the decision is made to open the intersection, close the downstairs concourse, or as we put it years ago, city circus. I set aside any arguments about the costs. The only way to proceed with this, in my opinion, is going to be to station cops full-time, round the clock at that intersection. And I'm going to tell you why, and it's the same thing I would tell Mayor Gillingham. Right now, when there are, and there's already panhandlers who should not be allowed on these narrow medians, whether it's at Portage and Main, whether it's on Provence, whether it's on Notre Dame, those panhandlers are endangering themselves and endangering drivers, okay? But when there's somebody around the intersection, you know that it's out of place. And it's most often, unless I suppose some outburst of celebration over a Jets victory or Bomber victory or something, it's generally something small. Now, we see what happens when all of a sudden there are protests announced ahead of time at the intersection. Start factoring in more pedestrians, the fact that it becomes normalized to have people around there. Now let's look at what's gone on in this city all winter long. with pro-Hamas protesters on overpasses, protesting downtown, marching to City Hall, protesting outside Polo Park. When it becomes normal to have pedestrians around that intersection, that means the traffic is going to be literally at the mercy of what they've seen in other centers around not only North America, but in other parts of the world, flash mobs of protesters. They're all going to meet at a certain place, a certain time. They start walking across the street, you know, from one side of Main Street to the other or whatever. And then they're going to stop and they're going to form human chains and they're going to sit down. Are the Winnipeg cops going to have balls enough the way the cops in other cities across the world, where they are now dragging those protesters off physically, whether it's in London or in New York City or other places, to stop that kind of disruption of public services? So opening up the intersection comes at a cost beyond the physical cost of closing down the concourse downstairs and the escalators. And one listener to the program made a good point. Why do they never talk about some sort of overhead crossing? I don't know if it would be a gigantic escalator system or something. Again, they'll probably need human attendance around the clock, but it takes them off the street. Again, I'm not going to get into cost, but there's other ideas, as Mays has suggested, and I guess as Councillor Wyatt has suggested, nobody's talking about. But this comes at a cost. There's going to be accidents. There's going to be pedestrian mishaps. There's going to be pedestrian deaths. And that hasn't happened at Portage and Main, with maybe one or two exceptions. Don't really pop to mind in my memory. Since 1979. So you're going to have added costs for that. And the traffic delays. And it's a main trucking route. And then all the buses are now supposed to go, or a lot of them are supposed to go through Portage and Main. So there's a consequence to opening the intersection, none of which was addressed by Gillingham, none of which is addressed by the mayor. The points made by Menno Zacharias, I'm going to repeat, the reopening of Portage and Main to pedestrian traffic would be a great plan if your end objective was to bog down the center of Winnipeg into a total rush hour gridlock and at the same time endanger the lives of pedestrians. The closing of Portage and Main to pedestrian traffic in 1978 was a major step forward in terms of pedestrian safety and traffic flow in downtown Winnipeg. And now, Mayor Gillingham, Councillor Rollins, seemingly Councillor Gilroy, Councillor Santos, Councillor Lukes, all in favor of just trying to rush this onto an agenda and ram this this idea through. Because, of course, we have to have it done at the same time as the new transit routes are enacted in June of 2025. Does that pass the sniff test for you? Doesn't pass the sniff test for me. Is this any different from a Sam Cates era walk-on motion? Maybe there's a distinction without a difference when it comes to this stuff. I'm going to continue, obviously, to follow this issue because it's at the focus of what we do. Nobody's talking about the effect on the people of St. Boniface, the potential effect on bus riders, the increase in emergency. Ambulances. Ambulances going to St. Boniface Hospital, which are already impacted. And the city never studies this. They put in bike lanes. They never study how the constriction of roadways near hospitals, whether it's Health Sciences Center or the St. Boniface Hospital, is affected. Whether patient emergency response to save patients' lives is affected. They skip over these inconvenient truths. I don't let them do that. I'll continue to cover this story. Coming up, with any luck, interview with Councillor Schreier. How convenient. By all means, go to actionline.ca. Check out the recent episodes. You'll know, and you know, one thing that's significant, 3 of our top 10 episodes are about unions. Labor management relations, 2 about MTS, and 1, of course, about the Transit Drivers Union. And I'm going to have more about them coming up as well. More about workers, unionized or not. more about public safety, more about businesses struggling in this society and in this economy, more about the mainstream media ignoring the stories that are important and are important to you, and more history, such as provided in this episode, our retrospective about Kenny Plain. I bring decades of experience and knowledge and some pretty good research skills. So ask yourself this. Which mainstream media outlet funded by Justin Trudeau is going to be the first to tell the public, well, Menno Zacharias, was he not like a deputy chief? And he said that this closure of that intersection was an important improvement to pedestrian safety. They won't, I will. That's why I'm asking for your support during fundraising season. Go to the donate page. You'll see a list of all our top stories in different categories. You can look at the subject tabs, of course, across the top. $2,900 or so in March. Can we do it with your help? I know we can, whether it's $10, $20, $100, $300, or $500. It all adds up. So we can expand our work as newsrooms contract, as CTV abandons you, as other media outlets are flooded with points of view that have nothing to do with your reality. Those of you especially that aren't urban visionaries who want to beautify the city, regardless of whether businesses end up folding and closing or not because of their wacky ideas about how cities are supposed to function and operate. As I have said, Portage and Maine cheerleaders better saddle up for a fight. Not so fast when it comes across like a walk-on motion. And we haven't been able to measure what the impact is going to be in the neighborhoods that rely on a reasonable, decent traffic flow. And they may find themselves on the receiving end of the gridlock or subject to the gridlock. Nobody's going to talk about that. I'll talk about it. Nobody else wants to ask hard questions at City Hall? I'll ask the hard questions. I'll start with Councillor Schreier. We'll try to get a hold of Mayor Gilliam. We're here for you. MartyGoldLive@gmail.com if you have any questions, comments, or interact donations too. News tips, send them along. We're going to continue to pump out work in March like nobody's business. I'm going to earn every dollar that you folks put forward to ensure that this platform, that this work of independent analysis and investigation about public affairs in Winnipeg can continue to grow, can continue to expand, and can continue to represent you and your interests, because God knows anybody gets money from Justin Trudeau ain't doing it. We're here for you because you have the power. Thank you for listening.
Because of you, the Great Canadian Talk Show has made headlines for over 15 years and forced important issues to be acknowledged and dealt with.
The problem here is that they want everything their own way in every situation. It's unpalatable to the general public, but they're frozen out by the process.
There are no subsidies for paying the bills for keeping the government honest.
They just see money. Of course, it's your tax dollars, but it's being spent on their pet projects.
We're on your side.
A lot of these people in special interest groups, they don't bear any relationship to your life out there. They don't have any handle on what your reality is in your neighborhood.
Support old-fashioned investigative reporting that matters.
The best source of information is not the city councilor. It is this program and you listeners.
Support TGCTS today.
Thanks for listening to The Great Canadian Talk Show. If you want to email Marty, send it to tgcts1@gmail.com or follow him on Twitter @tgcts.